And we are live. So, folks, today we are going to do something a little bit different here on the Crypto Gaming Institute podcast. We're going to dive into something really interesting. As I'm sure you all have seen recently, there have been a ton of ohm forks in the world out in crypto land. Some of them have been successful. Some of them have blown up. Some of them have been a roller coaster of going up, going down. And so what I really wanted to talk about is I wanted to kind of dive into Metaverse Pro as a case study. And so today, for today's guest, we have on TerraZone 101. Dude, you were instrumental in helping Metaverse Pro actually become what it became. I remember on launch day, you being just instrumental in like keeping the community together and really being an advocate for a community throughout the whole life cycle of the project. So really, just for the audience, just kind of give you an idea of like what we're going to be talking about today is we're going to talk about the story of Metaverse Pro and what really happened with it and what's still happening with it. We're going to learn some lessons about community management, about how to really launch something and instill confidence in a community, especially when there's a lot of anonymity. And then we're gonna pull out some lessons that we can all use to become smarter community members, smarter crypto investors, and we're gonna figure out how to survive this thing until we all get wealthy. So, anyways, Terra, thank you so much for coming on the show today, man. I really appreciate you taking the time.
Oh, it's a pleasure, man. It's a pleasure.
Yeah, absolutely. So let's jump right in. I would love to hear your story of like, how did you get into crypto in the first place? And maybe take us up to the point where you found out about Metaverse Pro and then we can kind of huddle up back there and then keep going forward. But really would love to hear your story of how you got into crypto up to that point of when Metaverse Pro was launched.
Absolutely. So, I've definitely heard about crypto. I started out in a trading group that actually was launched by one of my friends and classmates back home. And he launched it. It's called All Street. And in there, he talked about trading, investing, strategy, financial literacy, and trying to bring that to our hometown and around the world, really, with just that kind of level of understanding of what the power of investing in the stock market and beyond can do for you, real estate, et cetera. There's so many different markets and platforms. And he just wanted to provide an opportunity for everybody to kind of grow and learn and take yourself to the next level and really try to get out of the rat race. So I kind of started there. I obviously, was on Webull and Robinhood, and my forte was really options trading. And Robinhood had a couple of cryptos, and I was aware of like Ethereum and Bitcoin. And that's kind of where everybody kind of starts at. And, I was very bullish, still am very bullish on Ethereum. And I did get Ethereum. This is like in, I want to say the end of 2020, roughly around December 2020, Ethereum was roughly about like $589, about to cross over to $600.
Bargain shopping.
Exactly, right? We're talking about some really cheap prices now. And I just had a goal. I just wanted 10 Ethereum before it got to 1,000. And I did that. And I took my plays and my trades and got into Ethereum in that regard. I want to give credit to somebody in the crypto space, Kurgami, a person who I do know, happened to live nearby and stuff in real life. But he just went down this rabbit hole, no pun intended on my PFP, but went down this rabbit hole with crypto and really was like, listen, there is just so much more than went up, went down when you're talking about crypto, unlike the stock market where, yes, you can have options trading, but outside of that, it's really just like you have your dividends, but you can't really control it and work and make your investments work for you like you can in crypto. And he really opened my eyes to just doing more than just trying to hold a couple of tokens long term. So I think around April of 2021, I started out doing like the whole Polygon yield farming, Aave, things of that accord, and was following one of my favorite YouTubers, Taiki Mieda, who was like a yield farmer, and yield farming became a big thing. And I went down that path, was in hate to say the term and give them any sort of validation, but Iron Finance and Titan. And that was an algo stable coin, and Mark Cuban got into it. And I had my precious Ethereum that I was staking on there that I swapped for the token to just make some huge gains. Went to the zoo with the family and came back, and they had bank run that thing so hard. And yeah, all my money was gone from that. Oh yeah. That was really rough. So I ended up needing to just be smarter about my investments and how I recovered, and just being more mindful about what I was investing in. It wasn't just all about the APY as some people view it in the crypto space. There had to be more.
Right.
So, you know, did a couple of yield farms and tried to keep myself very conservative, bridged over to Avalanche, got their airdrop, those kind of things during the months. And then obviously come around September or so, became the wave of Ohms and Ohm forks. Ohm had started out, or Olympus DAO, as some people may know it, started out earlier this year, around the same time that I actually started with my yield farming. But it then went to... it went to survive through the dips and the consolidations in May and stuff. And I think that's what really brought people to be like, oh, this is better than yield farming, because you don't have to hold something to zero. There's actually backing and tokenomics that support it. And obviously from there, everything spiraled into massive forks. One of them being Metaverse Pro. It's no shortcoming or secret that, Facebook changed their name, Mark Zuckerberg changed their name to Meta. Now Metaverse Pro was out before that switch happened, and their token is also called Meta, or was called Meta. But just the direction and the power, if you've ever logged on to Decentraland or Sandbox and just played as a guest and just saw how powerful the UI was and the world is there in augmented reality, played VR, you know where the world's kind of going, especially with 2+ years of a pandemic. So that's kind of what led
intoxicating.
Me.
It's intoxicating.
Oh, yeah. It's insane, and it's just getting started. So the fact that a fork was going to have the name that it had and the name for their token, as well as the horizon of focus being the metaverse, I really felt like this was a fork that was looking to be long-term in their approach, and understood it's not about the short-term games and let's just make a quick token real fast. It was like, if you're talking metaverse, you know, it's not gains right now. It's gains like 5-10 years down the line. And if you're rebasing on top of that and got a strong community backing, you really can do some amazing things. So that's what brought me over there. I guess I can continue to how I kind of came onto the team aspect, if you'd like.
Well, let's talk a little bit about really the perfect storm that led to this blowing up, because from what I've seen and from what everybody is really, been so excited about, was the narrative of the metaverse. And yes, that narrative went absolutely crazy, as we all know, at the end of 2021. Yes. And it really came to a fever pitch when Facebook decided to change their name to Meta, because it introduced like 1 billion people to the concept of the metaverse. And that was like the best PR for crypto gaming in the metaverse that there is. And so you have that paired with, you have a ton of influencers that were all getting on board with that. They were all really hyped about it, and they were really, really starting to just feed into this frenzy that we actually saw a ridiculous amount of hype and of new entrants and of people that were like, this is my ticket. And I feel like everybody thought, and please correct me if I'm wrong from your perspective, but I feel like everybody thought, okay, or I'd say everybody, but a lot of people in crypto thought, I may have missed, DeFi summer. I may have missed early on in Bitcoin or Ethereum. I may not have played right I may not have played my stacks right in 2021. So now I'm early enough in the metaverse to where I can actually carve out a space in this industry for myself. And then it's like this perfect storm, because Metaverse Pro comes along and the promise is, hey, we are an Ohm fork So that's associated with ridiculous gains, ridiculous APYs, the rebasing. It's a beautiful thing. And mixing that with all this hype for the metaverse, it was like the perfect storm with the perfect narrative at the perfect time.
Yes, absolutely. You couldn't have said it better myself. Everything just lined up perfectly. The amount of search traction and traffic that we were getting, just in of what was happening in the space as a whole, was phenomenal. And it didn't require us to go, I don't know, shill Mark Cuban or go harass every other Discord in order to get to what 30 plus thousand community members and investors and holders. It really was organic in and of itself, which was beautiful.
Right. It's an incredible thing. So, okay. So we have this like perfect storm of things all coming together. I think it was just a ridiculous amount of everything happening all at the same time. And people were starting to lose it as far as risk management goes. Like there was almost no sense of like, oh, maybe I should be careful with my money and, you know, and have like a really good risk management strategy. Definitely not in line with the humble farmer thesis. So once you came across this, how did you first learn about Metaverse Pro? And then take us through the point where you then became part of the team.
So I think, if I really can think back on it, I think Metaverse Pro just came across as one of the Discords that I got shilled in my DMs as everybody was trying to meet their invite quota and those kind of things for potential whitelist. And I think that's how it came about from one of my inner friends or inner circles. I kind of took a peek at it and, you know, joined it for their sake and really, truly was not going to give any real shot or focus on the project as a whole, just solely because it was on Binance Smart Chain. And I had told myself up until that point that Binance Smart Chain had such a rug pull name for itself, and that was becoming a threat in the list of ohms and ohm forks, the potential of losing your funding in the attempts of trying to get an early access fund. And it truly wasn't worth it to me to even take that risk with a blockchain that I had no intentions of ever participating with. But I had just finished elevating myself a little bit in reading the tokenomics of Temple DAO and their tokenomic structure, and was looking at Lazerve DAO and their tokenomics. And I became a fan of reading basically the white paper and how that kind of gives you so much information, not only to, you know, do the due diligence of looking helpful in the community towards other people that are just too lazy to do it, quite frankly, but also it allowed me to have a better understanding of what the project was trying to entail and if it was worth my investment. And if I consider myself truly an investor, as a lot of people like to throw around in the crypto space, then I needed to do my research just like I would if it was a publicly traded stock on the stock market. So I read the tokenomics for Metaverse Pro right before joining. This was roughly around November 12th. I think they had finished their whitelist one event and they were onto their whitelist two event. And I just started asking questions. I saw what they were trying to accomplish. I actually noted some typing errors. One being that they had, it said in one of their paragraphs of tokenomics, it said that they were backed by one DAI, which was clearly a mistake in editing from the ohm documents. And I was just like, you guys are about to launch in a couple of days. Do you know this is there? And I started asking questions and bringing about constructive conversation when everybody else was kind of looking at just like one whitelist, when this, when that.
When moon, when marketing.
Exactly. You know, those typical GM, with like just random conversation that's not conversation. So I started having actual conversation and there was other community members that bought into that. From it led to a conversation about the rebasing rate, And it led to the rebasing rate. And we ended up having a community vote, essentially, like a DAO-like vote for changing it to hourly rebasing versus the eight-hour rebasing that Ohm and most of the Ohm forks were utilizing. And from that sparked, you know, their desire to ask for a mod. I actually was against the hourly rebasing. The community really liked it, but I felt like it was going to bring about more inflation. It was a double-edged sword. You have people that hop fork to fork in different ecosystems, trying to capture all the rebases as long as they don't need to sit in the rebase the entire time, and they have like a whole spreadsheet, and they're just trying to capture and hop from DAO to DAO, and that's one strategy. And if we have hourly rebasing, it's hard for somebody to do that to us. But on the other hand, hourly rebasing, where people get their rewards, even if you know, microscopically, they get their rewards quickly, and then they also are on Binance Smart Chain, where the fees are not scary. And I think that most people miss that factor. Like, the rebasing worked well, and Ohm didn't die out or bleed out from the rebasing factor, and people just manipulating that avenue of the tokenomics, because ETH's gas is unforgiving versus every other fork that was kind of doing it on cheaper chains where people didn't care and were not afraid to realize their gains very quickly and hop around. So I ended up applying to be a mod, and this was after the Whitelist 2 event. Whitelist 3 event was about to happen. This is roughly like November 14th. I had been up all night talking with the community and just kind of already taken the initiative of being helpful. And I was confirmed to become a mod for the team with one instruction, which was just to mod the last event. And that was it. There was no further instructions.
So wait, hold on. So that the night that you're talking about, it seems like that was launch night. Take us through that story, because I think that was a pivotal moment for the project where it could have gone south. It could have been really, really bad for the project and the community. But I'm pretty sure you came in and you actually saved their asses. So maybe take us through that story of like what was going on and why you actually stayed up like basically all night to make sure. Tell us a story of like what actually happened that night.
Yeah. So it wasn't launch night. That did happen. And I did do that with launch night. When I actually joined was the last whitelist event. And then therefore there was going to be no more whitelist, which was roughly about, I want to say 24 to 48 hours before the actual launch. Mm-hmm. Because this was the 14th, we launched on the 16th. So yeah. And I had just stayed up all night helping out with answering questions and stuff, kind of like giving them a sample of what I can do, especially mm-hmm. if they said they were going to pay me. You know, I wanted to show them my worth. And I was actually tired and going to go to bed when they confirmed that, like, be here for the whitelist in that event. And that was in 2 hours. So I took a 2 hour nap, woke up, came back in. You know, they had some issues with people trying to confirm their wallets from prior whitelist events and things like that. And I kind of just helped iron out and navigate through. Wasn't too much fudding, but they had decided, the core team had made a decision to actually remove people who had gotten whitelist earlier on in the first and second event that had not participated or spoke in the community since then. And I thought that was a pivotal decision that caused a lot of frustration for people who thought that they had secured their whitelist and moved on maybe to another DAO to work on that whitelist while they waited for the date for it to actually launch. So that played a factor, because then the remaining 24, 48 hours before launch was a lot of chaos of people trying to figure out why they have the whitelist role on their name, but they're not seeing their wallet on the, you know, they're not sure if their wallet is correct or they switch wallets, all those kind of factors that a lot of DAOs have dealt with these whitelist capabilities. And so I tried to push them to post either to post the website, as I seen another DAO do. I want to say it was OtterClam, where you were able to, before the actual launch day, connect your wallet. And if you were able to connect your wallet, you were on the whitelist. If you weren't able to connect your wallet, you were not on the whitelist. And to try to do that roughly like 24 hours beforehand, so we can iron out anybody who's having issues and have a smooth launch. That didn't happen, but it was, you know, something that I suggested that we could do. They do the wallet list on a spreadsheet to send out, but you know, that caused a lot of complications as well too. So truly that's what happened there. And then yes, so launch happened, and again, people who had been away from it and were not aware that they lost their whitelisting were frustrated. People who were able to purchase and did effectively purchase beforehand, when it came to launch day, they were told that they were going to be able to sell their tokens or do whatever they wanted with their tokens immediately at launch. And that actually did not happen. There was some sort of bug or UI issue that prevented it from happening at launch, and it kind of rolled out everybody's launch availability of release from the whitelist. And they actually did a whitelist, and they did a pre-sale public that went for less than 5 minutes, and they had the rest of the tokens that were not purchased in IDO that got purchased up in the pre-sale. So that was very abrupt and quick. But so on launch day, those people who had gotten their tokens early, which are usually the people that dump on the project during the initial pump, and every IDO and fork has seen this, and it's not, you know, if you purchase on launch day, you're doing so understanding that you just want to be that person to say you got the first rebase and whatever the current index is your multiplier as well, because you hold pride in that. And that was the power of Ohm tokenomics when they looked at it come August, and they were like, if you had just bought one Ohm, you'd have 30 of them now. And like that's what everybody loved. So they, you know, but otherwise it's really not smart to buy on launch day, because you're buying,
you're getting dumped on.
Exactly. With the understanding that everybody else is already kind of already in profit. That's so, right.
At that point, so you're staying up all night. You're basically like, you're preventing the FUD from getting too bad. You're modding. Yeah. You're seeing these kind of things happen. Are there any red flags at this point where you're like, something may be a little fishy here? Or did everything seem okay at that point?
Everything kind of seemed okay. It seemed like the community needed more than just me talking, because I was new. And I was not admin. I was not core team. I was just one mod. And unfortunately, you know, they kind of had mods on the list that didn't end up staying as mods or like helping out during launch. So launch day, it was truly just me modding the entire community, which, you know, to anybody who's ever helped out or seen what a launch day is like with these IDOs, it can be quite hectic. But
it's chaos.
You know, I used pinned messages. I actually didn't have the ability to pin messages. I didn't have the ability to control slow mode. It was really frustrating as a mod because I didn't have the perms to do what I felt a mod needed to do, but I made it work. You know, I talked with the community. I told them, listen, just give the hour, because they said it was like an hour window of time. And I said, listen, I know you're frustrated. You feel like you should be able to sell your tokens. Somehow it's where they're saying wait until up to the first hour window of time. So I said, give it that. And if it still isn't good, if you still can't sell your tokens, or if you still can't, you know, see them in your wallet or whatever the case may be, then directly message me, or like then ping me in the chat, because I'm willing to discuss. But from what they're saying, they said give them an hour. So do that. Give them the hour. There's no reason to be panicked. I also was unable to sell my tokens. So roughly I didn't sell any tokens, but see my tokens and be able to claim them and put them in the proper staking for the first 45 minutes. And that was frustrating for sure. But like, you just dealt with it. If the team said they need, up to the hour, then give them up to that. So after that was done, I decided to do a little bit more and I hopped in voice chat and I just spoke with the community. I told everybody, I pinged everyone. I said, listen, I'm going to be sitting in voice chat. I know technical analysis. You heard my background. And I know how to read price charts. And I just started talking about technical analysis and teaching people market psychology and number psychology, the law of averages, which a lot of traders use. And that's kind of where the indicators come from, using simple moving average and Bollinger Bands. All of these are averages to kind of give you the best idea of, are you buying with the most probability of it going up for you, based off of where you're getting it at. So I just started doing that for the community and they loved it. And the team hopped in and quietly just watched me handle the entire community. And people became more interested in the live stream of the price and talking about the project than they did about like any complications and nuances. And it made for a really smooth launch. So,
You basically saved the launch there. Because I could see if you're in a launch and for 45 minutes or an hour, you're not able to access your funds or do what you need to do, or especially if you can't sell, then, I mean, I could only imagine how much FUD there was at that time.
It was definitely aggressive. If you look back at the price chart of Meta that first day, I mean, what helped it though, truly, is I spun the narrative because the IDO people were unable to sell, which is usually the initial dump at launch. The IDO price was $18.35. The pre-sale public sale was like $22.17. And then the actual launch price started out at $35. And we went from $35 of the initial price of launch to $360 because the IDO people were unable to necessarily sell. So supply and demand, there was more demand than there was supply, and that drove the price of the token up. And I use that to educate the community of that's actually the power that you guys have. You want moon bags, you want the Wen Lambo and all that stuff. If you don't sell, that is the impact you have because of supply and demand.
Right.
And by telling people that and letting people see that, they were kind of like, oh, okay. Didn't understand that. Like that's how it works. And this is exactly how it works. So in them having a UI bug issue or whatever the case was, I actually used that as a narrative to show them the power of what the community has. And that's where I started laying the foundation down for the power of community.
That's powerful. So then, as we know, after that point, I mean, it just went nuts. It went absolutely nuts. I want to see if I can bring up the chart. Yeah. And look at this.
Yeah. Our first 2 weeks were insane. We recovered the whole IDO dip in 10 days. In 10 days, we had recovered the entire dip.
That's crazy. Okay, wait. Let me see if I can put this on the screen here for the folks. So, okay, I think I got it here. Let me know if you can see this. Yeah, we should be able to see this. Okay. So at launch, this was about right here on the 22nd, still the 22nd, 23rd, 24th. So when are we talking about right here? Like when are we initially talking?
Well, we just talked about launch day. So that was November 16th into the 17th.
Okay. So that's even earlier than this chart. That's earlier than this chart showing.
It might be.
Mm-hmm. But then we see very quickly after it moons.
Yeah.
It moons hard.
Yeah.
Wow.
I started teaching classes to the community and teaching people about technical analysis, teaching people about the tokenomics of the Ohm system, because I felt like other ohms focused on forking the code as if that's what made Ohm powerful. And to me, the power was the community of Ohm. Yes, the tokenomics were great, but Ohm, while nobody was looking, while things were tight and Bitcoin pulled back and Ethereum pulled back and stuff was happening, they were investing in their marketing for having, you know, Finematics and other very, very renowned YouTubers and stuff like educating their community on the tokenomics. So they understood what they were invested in because they were the first to do it. Wow. And by investing in the education of their community, they actually elevated the community. So it became less about why isn't it going up or down? Because if you understood the power of rebasing can be one of two facets. It can be paying you and mitigating the losses when it does dip down. And it's also another way of looking at it, like DCA, which is dollar cost average, of what your initial entry was.
That's right.
You know, I think people don't view those perspectives in understanding what rebasing can do for them. So I really started bringing that into the community. I actually was educating the community that entire pump on why it wasn't good. Like it was good that we were pumping and mooning, but I was telling them that we needed consolidation points because from a technical analysis standpoint, we were overshooting above our highest average constantly, but we were consolidating and creating levels of support, which is why it's not a straight up straight down that you see on the chart. And that was because of the sideways consolidations we made along the way, which was great.
So let's talk about, so obviously this was just a completely euphoric phase. We're looking at end of November, you know, the two highest points, end of November and the first couple of days of December here. Yes. At what point did you start to notice, hey, I'm not sure about this. There are some red flags. And what were those red flags when they started to appear?
So you'll notice, what did you say that second date was? December 1st?
December 2nd.
Second? Okay. So you'll notice as well, too, for anybody that is following along, if you went to Bitcoin, which Bitcoin dominance, and again, I talked about and used the term market psychology, but it's a big thing. And Bitcoin as well took a hard rejection on December 3rd. They took a hard rejection and they went and got rejected off of their 55 and broke underneath that. When Bitcoin
right around here.
Right. So when Bitcoin is under 55K, it can go to 52. And when Bitcoin is under 52K, it might as well be a 42.5K token. And that's just the channel. That's the wide channel, but that's the channel that it has with pseudo support resistance lines at 47 and 50. But essentially a 42.5 Bitcoin can shoot up to 52, get rejected, go all the way back down to 42.5. So when that rejection happened, I started educating the community that, you know, Bitcoin dominance is still a factor. And because the market sentiment come December is Bitcoin was dropping, but why is Bitcoin dropping? Well, you know, there was the issues with China, there was the issues with potential policy mitigations and things like that coming into play. There's also the holiday time period and people confirming their profits prior to for taxes.
Right. So we also have inflation. We have
the stock market,
higher interest rates.
Absolutely. So you have all those factors coming into play. You had the Bitcoin ETF hype that was happening, and then that got released. And then after that was released, that was relatively the last good news for the end of the year. So what you're seeing on that chart from roughly December 3rd till about, if you keep going, I'll tell you when to stop, right about there. Like you have Bitcoin consolidation and people afraid to put more money into their bags right now because they don't want to be taxed on it, number one, and they're understanding that the markets are still uncertain if Bitcoin can recrack 52 or are we going to break below 42.5, which we did, and go down to 40 with technically the strongest support is at 38.38. Okay. So And I'm not just throwing random numbers out there, but that's just what the market psychology is for Bitcoin, mm-hmm. and therefore impacts the market. Either Bitcoin was going to skyrocket or it was going to crash and falter. Or we're starting to get to a point where Bitcoin and crypto is being so kind of embedded in the real world, be it Staples Center, you know, for those in the US, the Staples Center, that's Los Angeles Lakers for basketball, right, is now called crypto.com.
That's right.
And that's just one of many facets of how big crypto has gotten, where we're losing some of that volatility and it's cooling off. So we're not going to have huge bull or bear markets. I don't think anybody felt like this was a real bull market that we've been in compared to other seasons mm-hmm. when it comes to crypto. I mean, what, Bitcoin went to 64 and consolidated for several months before cracking a new all-time high at 67. What's that? You know, that's mm-hmm. not really a real breakout again before consolidating again. So we'll see. But anyway, that is what was happening there. And I just kind of was educating the community on what was going on. And we were working on kind of figuring out other ways to mitigate inflation at that point, because mm-hmm. a lot of DAOs started to realize that they can't have the astronomical prices of APY that they use for marketing to get people in. And they have to cool off a little bit because you're going to have too much dilution mm-hmm. at the end of the day. So at the point of your cursor, they had talked about and created 6-6, which was a feature that used RAT stake meta that's supposed mm-hmm. to be a factor or a token that doesn't increase in quantity, but it increases in price value. It's embedded in the price. You see this with GOM and a lot of the other tokens have used this for tax purposes for their investors. But what they decided to do with that 6-6 is to actually use some of the initial IDO funding to fund the initial pool and then use the buyback from their bond purchases throughout the day to slowly buy back meta off the market, wrap stake it, and use it to recycle, to refill the rewards pool that it was filling up for people. So people got to receive the high APYs without it meaning new tokens in the market, because they were actually just recycling it. And I thought that was ingenious. That was great.
So that probably took us up to here.
Yes.
In addition to, there was a slight bounce back in the market as well. Correct. So you had two powerful push-ups.
Yes.
At this point, any red this is December 17th on the chart. At this point, did you see or were there any real red flags yet that had popped up just within the project itself?
You did ask me that question before, and I didn't answer because I wasn't thinking about it. When the token first started, I'm kind of going back a little bit, but when we first started, I got the role as community manager, one of the things I knew the community wanted was transparency. We weren't a docs team. People didn't know. I mean, it was no shyness. I was open enough to be like, hey, I had a pregnant wife. You even knew that. I had a pregnant wife. We had our baby New Year's Eve. But they knew I was a healthcare provider as well too. And I worked the weekend night shift. So, you know, it was hard to get in touch with me too much if it was busy. And if it wasn't busy, then I was there to help the community on odd hours for my time zone. But anyway, they wanted transparency, and I was trying to push that behind the scenes, saying, hey, listen, you guys, I understand security purposes and stuff. Maybe you don't want to put your name out there, but the community needs to know that their funds are safe. There's millions of dollars coming into this. How are we going to do that? I suggested they have a multi-sig to put it out there. First off, do you have a multi-sig? And then secondly, what is the voting structure on the multi-sig? And then get that information out to the community so they know how their funds are being protected, other than just somebody's wallet that can decide, oh, it got hacked or exploited or whatever the case may be. So when I asked that question to the core team, mm-hmm. and I really didn't have access to the full core team, by the way, there was a language barrier, because most of them were Chinese, and there was also a culture barrier aspect to it. And so that kind of played a part. So when I asked the question, the I got the answer that what they did have a multi-sig, but the answer was that it was a 5 out of 5 voting structure, which I told them that that was worse than actually having a multi-sig at all. Because if somebody lost their wallet, somebody died, somebody went MIA, no transactions could occur.
That's
because
right.
of the fact that you have every single person needed. And then even if you wanted to add somebody new or replace the wallet, unless that wallet voted on it, it's a dead wallet, essentially. Mm-hmm. So I had to educate on that. So I guess the red flags for me were just some things that I was surprised, because I didn't feel like, I felt like I was a newbie. This was my first official job, and I really didn't feel like I'd been in crypto long enough to be kind of giving some of the answers. But I realized quickly that my observations of what have happened with my experiences in crypto were actually things that maybe not everybody had. And therefore, it was important for me to advocate where I felt like advocation needed to occur. So that That's was, right. I don't want to say it was a red flag, because they you know, the one person I was able to contact from the core team did take it to them, and they were able to make the change and make it a 3 out of 5 and put that out there. You know, they did make me community manager. They did give me permissions to handle a lot of the Discord and revamp it and those kind of things. So really, my trust really just came in the fact that I was very critical.
You were invested.
Right. I was invested, but I'm very vocal, and I'm very critical to wanting more and wanting better for everybody involved.
Mm.
And sometimes if you really were trying to do something shady, you would not want somebody like that in your group that really pushes and questions and doesn't just take a simple answer at face value. It had to make sense. The numbers right. had to add up. Things had to make sense in order for it to go out there. And that's just what I brought to the table. So I appreciated that they allowed me to bring that, though I was never really able to sit at the round table, so to speak, with the core team. So that was a little frustrating for all that I was doing for them and being their guard dog, so to speak. But
that's right.
You know,
I mean, you saved the launch day, and there's not that much transparency. There are some inherent issues as far as like 5 out of 5 on the wallet. Like you said, I mean, that's, they did change it, which is good, but that has to get you wondering like, okay, these are now stewards of capital for, at one point, hundreds of millions of dollars.
Yeah, we have over 100 million, yeah.
Right, like it's gotta, like the ship has to be a little more airtight than that. I mean, yeah. I don't know, that's just my perspective on it. And yeah, so okay, so you started to see this over here. Now we get to over here with the 6.6.
So what happened with that dip right there, actually, at that climax point? Well, 6.6 was released. Everybody was enjoying it, right? Mm-hmm. And then, for whatever reason, again, I had been up all night and trying to work on the CoinGecko and getting us listed on CoinGecko. I got us listed on CoinGecko, but then we had some information that they never asked in their form that I had to get corrected, and I was working on that just because the community kept asking for it. I was under the assumption that somebody was handling it and handled, so I got tired of waiting myself. Same thing with CoinMarketCap. But I spent hours, and again, going to sleep to wake up for work on the weekend. And during the time of my rest, they had come up with what they wanted to do was like a ritual or like a game in the Discord to kind of really just interact with the community. But it was like a Pepe Frog lore kind of ordeal where people could comment on it. And if they made the same comment multiple times, it would arbitrarily at some point and then supposedly drip out meta for the community.
Mm-hmm.
So the concept, everything on the concept and everything sounds great, right? So what happened? What was wrong? Well, 6, number one, 6 is, they told me 6 is a lucky number in Chinese. So hence why a lot of things were 6. So they did 6. I got the numbers to make it make sense in a way for 6.6, because you hear 9.9, you hear 3.3. It's like, what is 6.6? And you know, is it just double leveraging or what is it? And you know, I finagled a way to make it work for them to be able to utilize the game theory point system to make 6-6 make sense in numbers. You can't just say that without the numbers adding up as far as the theory goes for Ohm tokenomics and what people are expecting.
Right.
But they thought, let's just add one more 6
and
make people pray to a Pepe frog in the Discord. And I woke up to, are we a satanic group? Because we're now praying 666 to a frog god.
And that happened here, 12:17 to 19.
So that was not great. I was very adamant with the team as to why that wasn't great. I understood the cultural barrier, but they didn't even ask. I'm like, you guys are messing with my culture in the community, because that's my job as the community manager, right, to establish the culture in the community. And I come back and this decision was made for the community without, you know, me having a say in it. So I actually forced them to give me the permission to make a professional announcement on behalf of the team in regards to that happening, because there were people who were definitely offended. I'm Christian. And, you know, whether it was a game or play or not, you have real people with real funds invested in this project. And I almost didn't invest in TempleDAO initially, because the word on the street was people had to do satanic rituals. Now, they were playing with their community there, and that was all a joke and not actually real. But that I really was like, I'm not willing to sell my soul for a bag. That's just not right. Me. And there's people who are like that.
And they didn't even get it. They didn't understand why that was a problem. That's right. Almost the biggest problem.
And that comes from culture. A lot of these forks are kind of being ran by multiple cultures. Crypto is global. But I think it's important for everybody to kind of understand that you need to have people from around the globe on the team. We were very international. We had, you know, obviously the core team was mainly Chinese. We had somebody from Canada. We had me in the US. We had somebody in Germany. I think we had somebody in Finland or something like that too. But we were all over. But you know, that wasn't understood to be an issue or why it was an issue. And I got it. It was an honest mistake, but like it could have been avoided had the communication been there. And still at this point in time, the mod team and the community members, the community manager being me, was not receiving the information necessarily before it came out to the community. What you may have seen or the community may have seen me as far as articulating the 6-6, articulating tokenomics and new features and stuff, was me processing the information and in real time breaking it down for the community, because I was not made aware of it prior to. So I was working on trying to get structure and organization and communication there, because, yes, again, in crypto, things move fast. But if you move too fast trying to start a new project in crypto, which truly you should view it corporately, you should view it like a business, because if you run it right, it can be something amazing with a lot of funding, with a lot of backing, and it is essentially therefore then a business. No business is made in 2 weeks. You need the structure, you need the foundation, you need the organization, the communication as to who's going to talk to who, for what, who's assigned to this, who's assigned to that. Structure needed to be in place. And there was none prior to me coming on as a mod. I worked hard for it. They ended up hiring somebody from like the Ohm Odyssey group to come in, and that they knew in real life, that was able to get and sit at the round table, which I was never really able to. And bridge that gap and really be a liaison and try and bring more organization. So, you know, I appreciated that, but it was quite frustrating. And again, easily avoidable mistake, but.
So it seems like that was almost the beginning of, I don't want to say the end, because they're still out there and it's now being rebranded and moving to Ethereum. Correct. But it looks like this is the beginning of a very steady decline of the project. Now, At what point did you?
No, go ahead.
Okay, so there's this pretty steady decline here, and you know, I believe you have now left the team, and you're mm-hmm. you know, you've moved on. At what point did you make that decision, and what was kind of the final straw for you exiting the project and moving on?
Well, can you go back to where December 24th is, like Christmas Eve?
Yeah, where is that? Right here. It's like, this is 3 a.m. on the 25th. It's right about here.
But 25th is Christmas. Where's Christmas Eve at?
Right here. Like, we're at 3 p.m.
Like the start of Christmas Eve, or like the day before Christmas Eve.
Okay. So we're at 11 p.m. on the 23rd. Is right here on the chart.
Okay. So right around that time, they did a impromptu they did it was Christmas weekend, so that's Friday, I believe, was the 24th. So they did an impromptu, they had a Chinese AMA, and after that Chinese AMA or Chinese class, they actually started teaching the classes like I was doing, just for those in Chinese, mm-hmm. or that spoke, you know, Mandarin. And from that class discussion they had, it came about that the 6-6 protocol did not work anymore and was causing too much inflation somehow. And so they did a 2-hour emergency vote on Christmas Eve at like 7 a.m. Eastern Standard Time wise, to
about right here,
yeah, to remove, like, to change or reduce the rewards rates on there. Mm-hmm. Now in 6-6, if you did not claim your rewards, you didn't have to per se, but if you did, because claiming your rewards restarted your 5-day lockup timer, so some people just didn't want to do that,
right?
So some people were just kind of sitting, waiting. I had to do a whole customized calculator for everyone to show them the profits if they were, you know, claiming every hour with a bot, or if they weren't claiming at all. Like, I did the whole spectrum for them. Mm-hmm. And they changed the rewards, which ineffectively then impacted everybody's pending rewards on there. So people lost a lot of money in that change. Because it cut your rewards down. Like, your rewards, there was a small disclaimer on the site that said if you didn't claim your rewards, that it wasn't yours yet. But it wasn't reiterated in the proposal that was offered for the snapshot voting, that right. you would be losing your rewards, and they didn't give anybody time to claim them before doing this on a holiday weekend, as far as the U.S. is concerned. And
that's not right.
I was very, very frustrated with that. I was angry, actually, because that was just so wrong on so many levels that should have been addressed. And nothing was said to me about it or whatever. So at that point, that was a hard hit for me, for the team.
Yeah. Especially because at that point you put in so much time, you put in so much energy, you've devoted your soul for basically the past month to this project and making sure it stayed alive. And then that happens.
Yeah.
And it's like, what the fuck? What's like, what's going on here? I mean, like,
it
feel like a slap in the face.
It was rough, and I think more so it was rough because I pride myself on educating the community and just talking numbers, talking logistics, talking smart investing strategies, etc. And I just felt like that it was hard for somebody to follow some of the things that I was saying were pivotal needs if you want to call yourself a true investor in the crypto space, or strategic in how you handle and manage your investments. Mm-hmm. When we were doing things to me, that seemed to be too abrupt for even me on the inside to properly manage my funds. I actually was trying to calculate and have a nice little 2-day window where I had enough meta wrapped and staked with the rewards that I was making enough where I would have made the 2K I wanted to take out and confirm as profit to move over into for an IDO for another DAO called Diatom. And I effectively wasn't able to do that anymore because my what would have been more than 2,000 for the 2 days I was giving was $150.
That's crazy.
And what was pending there. So yeah.
And on top of that, so on top of just blatantly not giving people their money, you've also built so much credibility with the entire community at this point. People are looking to you for answers for guidance. And then when something happens that you have no control over, there's people don't care that you don't have control over that. That puts a huge target on your back, even after you've devoted so much blood, sweat, and tears to this project. I totally could see how that feels unreasonably unfair to you, and how that would and people aren't going to do the research to figure out that you're not the one that's making those decisions. You're just trying to help the people out. I could totally see how that would be crazy.
Right, and there was an interesting marketing play that where I was welcomed onto the team in the team info section, both on their documents, if you went to it, as well as in the Discord where they had team info. They had put me on there, so I no longer was able to be like, I'm not team, I'm just the community, like I'm just one of you guys. So I did kind of accept that role without the actual privilege or real say behind it. So it was a hard pill to swallow. The community, to that point, I had built enough rapport and I was very genuine and open about what I state, that they had a feeling that it had nothing to do with me, but they wanted me to explain it. And I, you know, we had an AMA, and my only statement necessarily in that AMA was I had argued with the team and made it very clear that going forward, we were going to be having a structured voting schedule where a vote was going to get 72 hours, a regular vote was going to get 72 hours on Snapshot. Then whatever was voted on would get a 48-hour grace period before it was actually enacted, which gave the community, mods, and team plenty of time to educate them during the vote, remind them that there is a vote, educate them on what the vote means for them, and allow investors to be able to appropriately make a decision before an actual change was made. And I made that happen. And then I also was like, if you really feel like there needs to be something faster because you feel like that's not enough time, then you can have an emergency vote for something that's truly hurting our project that is 36 hours long and 12 hours to enactment, which is a 2-day turnaround, which nothing should really catastrophically drop you to zero.
In 2 days.
In 2 days' time. And if it is, why was it there in the first place?
That's right.
And why hasn't it impacted us up to this point, or have we been ignoring it? And now that we're here, we have to make there's no excuse. So as far as I was concerned, a 5-day turnaround for regular votes and a 3-day and a 2-day turnaround for an emergency vote, but it still gave 36 hours for everybody to have a shot at potentially voting on it. If we're going to be a DAO and the community is going to have a say, then the entire community needs to have a say. And I'm
draw a hard line in the sand, and it seems like that's happening around Christmas, around this area. Yeah. At what point did you decide you're out?
I had my baby and I came back behind the scenes while I was still in the hospital, and this was like on New Year's Day. And in that, I'm reading about how they want to do this merger to go over to Ethereum and change their name to Congruent and remove themselves from the metaverse field and just say that they're going to be a DAO that makes you money. And I rose every red flag that I felt was nonsense. And I was brutally honest with the entire team. both behind the scenes with the core devs, as well as in the mod chat, with how that just did not make sense. And also to the mods, stop yelling at the community or stop being upset with the community for bringing up legitimate questions.
Right.
Because they were all the same questions I brought up, which I told them was going to happen. You cannot, it was like read the room. You could not have
read the room, right?
you have investors that came over, or you have people who are invested, I'll just put it that way, in your project. But you have two facets, because one of my things, and I have a whole investors checklist that I explained and pinned to the community on how a real investor has a checklist, and until their conviction is broken, they don't act impromptu on something. They don't act emotionally to something. But I was like, an investor's conviction is going to be one of three things. It's either going to be the network, the field of the project, or the team. In the case of like Wonderland with Daniel over there, you know, people could, for that Docs team, really just be like, I'm just putting my money in him. We weren't Docs. Right. So there, I had very, very little confidence that it was team. So people are invested in us because we're Metaverse Pro. That's our name. Right. People love that. Our token was Meta. We have free range of search history there, as far as like people looking for, you know, Facebook's Meta. Or just metaverse in general, they're going to stumble across us.
And now you're pivoting completely.
And you're pivoting away from that with the comment that you need something bigger, the metaverse, you're bigger than the metaverse. And I had a hard time understanding where we were coming from, because I was like, if Facebook, a multi-billion dollar company, could change their name to Meta for the long-term horizon, and it's sufficient enough for Fang in a publicly traded stock market company to see the future horizon in. But we, as a almost less than 2 month project, we're too big for that. It just it didn't make sense.
It's silly.
You have people invested in us because we're on Binance Smart Chain. And they maybe like some people, there's a legitimate strategy, and I have it as well too, to have a solid rebasing project on each blockchain that you care to use. So then if it's constantly rebasing and paying you, that's a source of income. You don't need a bridge anymore. Mm-hmm. If I got Ohm on Ethereum, I got, you know, Metaverse Pro on Binance, I got Lazerve on Terra ecosystem, et cetera, I can go there, sell some of my rebase tokens, have a profit, use that to DCA into the rest of the ecosystem. And I never need a bridge. And that's a legitimate strategy. And you want to take that away for the people that are on Binance and tell them that they need to come over to you on Ethereum, which is unforgiving. OpenSea, the network, the NFT platform, is moving over to Polygon. Ohm is trying to get off of Ethereum, and everyone else is moving away. You're trying to move towards. And
the writing on the wall there is L1s are not for people. L2s are for people. L1s are for like bigger big money, right, and big projects and other chains to build on top of. But the writing's on the wall there, so it doesn't make sense from a strategic standpoint, and you're changing the entire purpose of Metaverse Pro,
right,
and you're moving away from that, and you're making it in a snap decision, and then you're not really working with your star community manager who has saved you all these times to like make a good decision. So
Go ahead. I'm sorry. I was just going to say, it's not even necessarily about me. I was just trying to think of the mindset of the community. Like you cannot make a decision like that and expect that your community is going to follow you. Most of the community is at a loss at this point. For those that did hold from jump, I mean, like I said, our IDO was $18.35. Launch was $35. It's sitting at a $24 token right now. People are at a loss. And even if they held, even with the rebasing, you cut their fees in 6/6 and didn't compensate them for that. We stated that we were going to drop a game, Meta Ash. I do have a good friend of mine from the team that is working hard on that project, but that Meta Ash, like that second, like almost one of those pumps before the last one I said, that other pump was the fact that we were going to drop a game created by the team.
Mm-hmm.
Instead of just partnering with a metaverse game, we were going to create our own, which is phenomenal. Right. But now you're abandoning the network and your game is saying that they're going to stay on Binance. So, and that
doesn't make sense.
Both communities are impacted there.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, so I just, that was really my straw where I was starting to figure, like, I really don't know how to best address this. And then on top of that, and how best I can do it genuinely, like the genuity or the honesty that I have. And when I speak and when I talk to my mm-hmm. community, mm-hmm. They feel that, and that's what they buy into. And I'm not willing to jeopardize that level of trust that I have with people and establishing behind my name, mm-hmm. For Meta or anybody really. I'm not going to lie for a buck. I'm not going to do it. So I just really, you know, thankfully at the same time I had my baby, and was delivering a baby. And so therefore I wasn't really as active with addressing the what was going on
mm-hmm.
to the community. But then also my wife, you know, pulled me aside and let me know, like, you know, she had been taking care of our oldest, kind of by herself, handling the house, handling everything else while pregnant, while I was working full-time weekends and working full-time during the week for Meta and putting in 80-hour weeks. And she was the backbone. And, you know, having delivered a baby and have another baby in our family and stuff, she really was supposed to be off her feet and stuff. So I tried to continue my work with Meta for the couple of days and then had a talk with my wife, who let me know that she really needed me, not financially to support us, but she needed me to emotionally and spiritually and physically support my family. So that combination of this, of the merger plus my family, responsibilities effectively led to me being like, yeah, no, I have to go. I'm done. So.
Well, I'm amazed that you stuck with them for so long, because I mean, that's really just a nod to the conviction you had and, you know, your ability to be resilient throughout all those different things. I think that's really a nod to your grit and your resilience. So, you know, I just want to applaud you for that. I also want to say congratulations on the new baby. That's amazing.
Thank you.
So, you know, I want to take a couple lessons from this. We've already gone over the hour mark, but this has been a fascinating episode. What I want to really dive into here is, after all that, do you still believe in Ohm forks? And based on everything you've learned and everything you've seen, what are you looking for? If you still believe in the model, what are you looking for in that model to, like, give you the confidence to allocate capital to that?
I think community is key number one. I've always felt that. If you have a community that's invested in, that's educated in, and I did start to see other forks start to steal my, you know, teaching classes idea. Mm-hmm. And bring that to their communities, which all power to them. The more educated the community is, the more constructive conversation you could have. You'd be surprised how many smart individuals have the ability to contribute to your project and take it to higher heights you didn't even know. You got mm-hmm. game developers, you have programmers, you have networking people who run YouTube and run this. You have a whole podcast here, and you came in the community. So, you know, if the project sets a strong foundation, read the tokenomics, read the white paper, listen to the team talk. Does it sound genuine in what they're mm-hmm. saying? They seem like they have an overall plan. I hate hearing that a project just kind of spawned itself in 2 weeks. I did from my work here get solicited to become a project manager on another project that I do want to find ways to incorporate some of the Ohm tokenomics into, because I do think they're strong, and make a nice blend in a completely new facet that's not just straight Ohm. But I also mm-hmm. convinced the people that were starting that that, you know, take your time. You know, initially they wanted to be like, oh, it's going to, you know, look, we can get this done in like 9 weeks. Why?
Right.
Crypto's not going anywhere.
If you're in it for the long term, you don't need.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. You know, so now we have more like a time horizon of roughly the end of Q2. And we don't have a name or anything for me to shill or anything like that right now. But just taking the time to build the foundation and have a real roadmap and follow it. We did not follow our roadmap at Metaverse Pro. And I get the curve wars is a big hype right now in momentum. And so was the Metaverse field. And maybe that investment is just a hype investment that follows the momentum. But that's not anything you can really necessarily get behind if they don't have like an actual plan. Because oftentimes if something is momentum like AMC and GME and you're hearing it all over the place, it's probably already too late. You're already somebody else's bag at this point.
That's right.
So, you know, same thing with Shiba Inu, meme coins, etc. You know, if you're investing in these things because it's trending, realize it's trending for a reason and most of the gains already happened there. So to get back to your question, community, have constructive conversations. See how the team handles things. Do they handle it professionally? Are they open to actual conversation and constructive criticism? There's a difference between FUD and constructive conversation. You can have a disagreement or feel like something doesn't add up. None of these APYs add up. It's a null and void. None of the APYs add up because they'll never sustain themselves for a full 365 for you to ever see them.
Mm-hmm.
So an APY is annual percent yield to those listening. So if it's not going to last a year, stop worrying about it. That part's not what you're investing in. What you need to be investing in is their roadmap, the team, the tokenomics, and the community. If the community seems like it's educated, if the team seems like they're willing to listen, they're willing to take contribution, willing to evolve with you guys, with crypto, then you have the right project. If they're not, then, you know, you should consider taking your funds and confirming profit. There's nothing wrong with leaving a small bag. I've definitely learned by now that potential profit is not real profit. And as my friend who built the All Street Trading Group, his favorite comment is, or theory is, potential profit or confirmed profit is better than potential profit, always.
That's right.
So confirm your bag. I don't know how many times I've stared at potentially 50,000 that it has not been that.
Mm-hmm.
And if you just think about how many times you maybe stared at 10,000, maybe it wasn't 50,000, stared at it, didn't confirm it and take it, and how you could have stacked that same 10,000 that you've seen a couple of times from a couple of different of your projects and where you would be at today if you did that.
That's
so
right.
Just trying to be humble in your mindset, have an exit strategy for everything. That's just the investor way to go. So those will be my tidbits for it. I do believe OHM tokenomics can work. I am a fan of them. I'm still invested in a couple of them, but the longevity needs to be there, and understand that if you didn't get in the IDO, it's not the end of the world, but definitely your best bet to buy is going to be after the dump. That will happen. And
that's right.
Truly, if Bitcoin does not really take a strong push in the positive direction and continues to trade sideways and under, we are actually going to see how real OHM survives as far as their tokenomics and their ecosystem. At one point, Metaverse was a more expensive token price value-wise than OHM and Klima. So that should tell you guys something. You know, I believe Klima long-term. I believe Diatom will be great long-term because they have in real-life use cases and they have a docs team and they have those things kind of working for them that you can get behind and hopefully see real-life action behind it. So I'm not worried about my L in Klima right now because the rebasing is going to keep doing what it does. And one day we'll be fine and we'll recover. But those would be my tips to everybody for looking at OHM forks. And truly think about stop chasing them. I know everybody wants to do the IDO pump and dump. It's not even worth my time anymore. There's so many rug pulls. I stopped chasing them. I don't care. I really don't. It's not worth me exposing myself to a project that's going to emotionally frustrate me because I spent hours trying to grind out or harass invites for to meet a whitelist thing for a project that is gone day two because they didn't have their stuff together.
That's right. That's right. So Tara, I want to thank you so much for coming on the show today. You know, I know you've been through a lot with this stuff, and what you've also been experiencing in, you know, IRL on top of all this stuff. I mean, you're a freaking warrior, dude, and I applaud you for everything you're doing and everything you're going through. So thank you very much for coming on the show, for giving us a breakdown of what really happened behind the scenes with everything going on with Metaverse Pro. This is not FUD. This is just purely, you know, I wanted to get a neutral, unbiased opinion and really get the facts of what happened from somebody who's on the inside or was on the inside while things were happening. So thank you very much. And I really do appreciate your time.
Yes, thank you. I enjoyed being here talking with you. We'll hopefully we can do this again, maybe with the next project I'm in down the line or whatever, or even talking technical analysis, whatever you want. Game, just ping me and I'd be more than happy to come on and chat with you. I do want to say out there to anybody that's listening that is still in now Congruent, but before Metaverse Pro, that I do love and respect you guys and had y'all back as much as I could, and that I hope for your sake that the merger works out well and you guys are able to regain your losses and come away with some profit and move forward in your financial journey. So I do want to give a shout out to them.
Awesome. You're the man. Thank you to everybody watching and listening. Y'all are the best, and I will see you on the next episode. Take care now. Mm-hmm.